Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhart. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to just... I only do this like 40 million times. That is a blooper, people. Okay. Live recordings for you.
The exciting thing about live broadcasting.
I've never done that before either. That's great. Let's try this again. Take two. Alrighty. Because I am a pro, right? Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhart. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 136. That's right, 136, Huzzah Con 2015. And I am live at Huzzah as I record this. You can be watching this live on our live page. That's right, wargamingrecon.com/live. And I am joined in this episode with a very special guest, Adrian Benson. But before we get to him, I just want to let all of you know that in case you're listening to this after the fact and you want to find out more about what we discuss, you want to make sure that no matter what, you remember to go to the show notes for this episode. You can get to those show notes by heading to wargamingrecon.com/WR136. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR136. So you may forget everything else we talk about. I hope you won't, but if you do, just remember this. So I want to welcome Adrian. Adrian, how are you today?
Doing good, John. Thanks for having me.
So I'm actually really excited about this because you're not just here because of Huzzah. I mean, you are. But you and I have known each other for a while and we've gamed a lot. So it's, or at least it feels like a lot. I don't know.
It's been quite a while. How long? It's got to be at least 10 years.
Yeah. Wow.
10 years. Yeah.
That's longer than I've been married. That's pretty amazing. you're actually the one who got me into coming to Huzzah. So it's kind of a cool connection for me that, I remember one year you said, oh, I went to this convention up in Maine. It's really cool. And, I don't know. Did I come the second time? Do you remember? Second year?
Yeah, before? I think it was the second year you came. I came up along the first year and, then you were up here for the second year.
And then I came the third year and then I missed everything after that, right? Until
this
now,
year.
And which is year five?
Five, I think, yeah.
So Huzzah Con 2015 is the fifth year, that's a cool milestone for a convention.
Yeah.
I know in our episode today, we're going to be talking about some of the stuff that we've played, most of what you played. I've only been able to play one thing, but things that we've done at Huzzah this year. And, I want to kind of touch on some of the stuff that gets you coming back here up here, because you've been here, I think, almost every single year.
I've made it every year. I haven't missed any.
So that's a feat.
Yeah.
And, why don't we just dive into it? I know that the first game we both played was on Friday night. The convention starts on Friday, runs all weekend, and we played, it was a Muskets and Tomahawks game. Run by Earl Richards. It was called Bloody Tomahawks, Supplies for the Outpost. 28mm figures. It was French and Indian War. I had a max of 10 plays, and I think he was maxed out, right?
I believe he was, yeah. Yeah, there weren't any spare units or anything. He filled up. So, the name of the game was Bloody Tomahawks. The rule set is Muskets and Tomahawks, which is a, I don't know how you would want to say it, a not entirely serious look at, small scale skirmish conflicts in the French and Indian War and the American Revolutionary War. It's more about the Muskets and Tomahawks games are more about the story than they actually are about the tactics and differentiation between the different types of units.
Well, one of the cool things about Muskets and Tomahawks is that it's a skirmish game.
Yeah.
So it actually, you could play something like Black Powder, and I mean, we've scaled it down, but Black Powder, or a lot of like the ancient rule sets, it's kind of at its best when you have tons of stuff on the table.
It looks best that way. They do generally, yeah.
And especially at a convention, like you're going to want a lot of stuff because it's good eye candy, and that's how you get people to come to play in the game.
Right.
But with Muskets and Tomahawks, you don't need that much because it's skirmish. You can scale it back a lot, actually.
Yeah, that's one of the good things about that rule set. You don't need a ton of figures to get started playing the game. Like you can get by with the smallest games. Maybe 20 figures per side. So you have to paint up a total of maybe 40 figures. And 40 figures, if you were doing, say, an average size Black Powder Napoleonic era army, that wouldn't even be enough figures for one battalion. It might be enough figures for a unit and a half. So if you're not the speediest painter in the world or you just don't like painting, a skirmish game like Muskets and Tomahawks is a good choice.
And one of the neat things I think about the rule set is that not only is it a skirmish level game where you don't have to control as much, because a lot of figures can be daunting for people. You say, here's a brigade of stuff, move it around the table. Here's three brigades. Someone might be like, whoa, what? Especially if it's your first time playing.
Yeah.
But with this, they have the side quests, which kind of gives you like a role-playing element to it.
Yeah, it does. There's a whole list of different side quests in the back, but basically most of the side quests are for the officer leader type figures where, an officer may have a particular hatred for one of the units that is under his command, and one of his side quest goals, which will actually earn him extra victory points at the end of the game, might be to get that unit wiped out in combat. Or he may have a personal feud with one of the leaders on the other team, and he may, his side quest goal might be to challenge the opposing officer in a duel, and they have to fight each other. He has to kill the other guy in hand-to-hand combat, stuff like that. So it does add a role-playing element.
And I know that wasn't used so much in Friday's game, but it was neat because he modified things a little bit. Whenever we played it where it's a random mechanic as to when you're going to get a turn, basically, when your unit will get to go. Because it's card-driven, right?
Yeah, there's a couple of optional ways to do to handle the turn sequence in the rules. The standard way is just you have the deck of cards. It's an activation deck that will tell which side, what type of units they can move. There's different types of units in a game. They're broken down into, regulars, militia, provincials, Indians, and irregulars. So there's cards for each of these units in the deck, and normally the way you handle the activation is the referee or whoever's running the game just turns the top card of the deck over, and that's the type of unit that gets activated. But what Earl did when we played Friday night, which is an optional method that's outlined in the rules actually, is you pick an overall commander on each side, and that person gets dealt three cards off the top of the deck, and then they alternate choosing what unit is going to be activated. So it gives you a bit more control over the sequence of play, and it gives players a little bit more control rather than the total random nature, and it allows you to plan out your movements and actions a little bit better. The interesting part of it is that since the cards are dealt randomly, you may have cards that only allow you to activate your opponent's units. But the randomness of it it gives you more, like I say, it gives you more control, and you can plan, because you can know what's going to happen within the next two, three turn sequences, and when it's going to be able to do what.
One of the first times when we played the game, because we played it a few times, and when I looked at that mechanic, I actually thought that game mechanic was that you had separate decks, one for your side, one for the other, so that you only got your cards that would activate your units, not the opponent's side. So when Earl was doing this, I was thinking, wow, he altered it up again. But it turns out, I just, through the Ravages time, I misremembered what it is.
Yeah.
But I like it even better, because at first I was thinking, activating your opponent's troops, that's not necessarily going to be a good thing, because they can shoot you, they can get into a better position, it kind of puts you at a deficit. But it also allows you, it's like chess, where I like to play as black because I like to, see what's going on.
Yeah.
And I want to react to what's going on. So I can say, oh, wait, they're going over here. You get like free intel, basically. And then you can better respond to it.
Yeah. In a turn-based game, it's often advantageous to go second. But so, it may not be the greatest thing to have your opponent go before you, but you don't have to play that card. You have control over it because you have other cards you can play. So
that's true. And in Friday's game, it was split up between the British, and there were Indian allies, and French who had Indian allies as well.
Yeah.
British were having a supply convoy that had to resupply their outpost. Of course, it can't be as easy as that. So, in addition to that, they had to cross a river, and there's a bridge there, so you think bridge, easy, right?
Yeah.
Bridges weakened, which meant that the great wagons full of all the supplies and it can't go, and everything had to be traveled over the bridge onto pack horses, onto ponies and stuff, and then through the whole game board, basically, to get to the outpost on the other side,
right,
which made it more challenging, especially since when we were divided up, it's funny, Earl asked who wanted to be French, and people were like, oh, okay, me or whatever. And then he was still trying. He's like, come on, we need someone else. I don't know why. No one wanted to be French.
Nobody wants to be French.
And well, as we know from the end of the game, we understand why, I guess. but then even amongst the sides, we kind of went on like, who wants this? Who wants that or whatever? And you, as luck or unluck would have it, were the provincials who were the unit that had to carry the supplies.
Yeah, we had to make sure the supplies got to the outpost. So it was a little bit limiting because, the important objective was for us to get the pack horses to the outpost, and it didn't leave a lot of time for us to stop and actually defend ourselves. We just kind of had to run the gauntlet and hope for the best, which actually we were able to accomplish it. So it was lucky, but yeah, it wasn't,
Well, it helped too because you were on a road and bordering the road for a good chunk of where you would have traveled. You had fences, which gave you light cover. So you got it was harder to see you, and you got a bonus in effect to when you were getting shot at to see whether or not you would be hit.
Right.
Unfortunately, I think you lost 2/3 of your pack horses.
Yeah, we had 3 and we lost 2, but we only had to get 1 through. So
I tell you, it's going to be a rough winter. Those people in that outpost, they'll be eating the horse when it,
Well, hopefully the rum made it.
Yeah, you gotta hope so. I ended up, normally whenever we played, I end up playing as sort of like militia type people who don't tend to be pretty good.
Yeah.
And this game, I lucked out. I got the British, Rangers who are regulars, the scouts, marksmen. So basically what that means, they get to go through the terrain as if it's not there. They get full movement, whereas other units, they have to slow down. And then also any ones that I rolled, whether it was to hit or to wound, I got to re-roll. So I could be like, let me see if I'm going to hit you. And oh wait, I missed, but wait, I roll again. And with my luck, I miss again, but, it could be huge. And the way the board was set up, I think it's important when you do muskets and tomahawks that you have enough open space, but also enough cover, because otherwise if you have any Indians, for example, they're going to get slaughtered.
Yeah, the Indians in particular, and the regular troops in general, their advantage is their stealth, which they can't use their fullest effect if they don't have any terrain or cover in which to use it. So, yeah.
I just happened to be able to position my Rangers on the edge of a wood so I could shoot out directly across from where a chunk of the British were coming. They had, what was it, British regulars, a unit of them, and a unit of British Indians, I think.
Yeah, a small unit.
Not British, French, sorry, French regulars.
Right, right.
Indian. So I was able to just kind of keep on pouring fire into them. Although the Indians, through some, it's the card mechanic is what did it, really. Indians were able to just hoof it. They moved, and then got to our settlement and burned down a building and,
right.
And went after our officer.
Yeah, and that's the problem a lot of people have with card mechanic is it's even with the way, with Earl using the optional rules where you can kind of determine who gets to do what when. And this is a problem with most card-driven games. You can spend long stretches of time where your forces are you just have to sit there and take it.
Well, that's what happened to you. I mean,
yeah.
For most of the first turn, I think almost the entire first turn, you sat there because your cards, provincials have 2 cards, right? One gives them 2 moves and one gives them 1 move.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And those are the last 2 cards played of the turn. So you sat there and you're like, okay, I'm going to try it. I'm sitting in.
Yeah. And the reason for that in the first turn anyway was that the French had those cards in their hand.
Yeah.
And obviously they didn't want me to be able to move.
Of course.
So yeah, so that's it, 2 sides of that coin. I mean, it can be good, but then what happened to me can happen frequently, and it's not as much fun that way.
And that's tough too, whether you're going to do, say, if you were ever to run this at a tournament or at a convention, you want people to constantly be involved. And we ran this at TotalCon in 2014, right?
Which yes.
2014. And that was something I know we talked long and hard about. Because we were like, will they have fun? Will they be able to constantly be doing stuff?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it can be a drawback, but granted, I wasn't the player who had to deal with it. When it was my turn, people were just like, oh, here you go, you go, you go, you go, you go. And
we did. And if you recall, when we were talking about, you know, what to do at TotalCon, and we decided on muskets and tomahawks, and it's like, how are we going to do this? That's actually the reason we chose the default rule of just dealing cards off the top of the deck. Because it's still random. You can still potentially end up with a stretch of time where one side's units get to do everything, the other side's units don't get to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But that would just be a luck of the draw, and it wouldn't be planned. With using this all-round activation system, if your opponent has the right cards, they can just kind of lock you down like the French did with me.
Yeah.
And if they don't want a particular unit to be able to do anything, then they just don't let that unit do anything if they have the card. So, but that's why we chose to use the default activation method. It's for tournament game, I actually think that works better because it's more likely that people will be able to do, perform an action. They'll be more likely to be able to act frequently as opposed to the alternate method.
Yeah, no, that's true. I gotta say, after playing it this way on Friday night, I agree with what you're saying, but I would like to do more of it where you deal up three cards and you see how it goes, even if it was at like a convention or a tournament.
Yeah.
Not all the time because you do run into that problem, especially at a tournament, you run into that problem.
Yeah.
Where usually tournaments, you get a pay to play, you get a, there's some sort of prizes for playing it. At a convention, you pay to get into the con. In some cons, you actually pay like for tickets to play or whatever.
Right, right.
But there's no prizes. It's not like, oh, well, you win the game, you get a bunch of stuff or whatever. So you don't have to worry about that so much.
Right.
And, I don't know how you felt about it, but it seemed like everyone else, even the team that lost, when the French lost, and they lost, yay. but even when they lost, like everyone seemed to be just having such a good time.
Yeah, well, Earl ran a good game too. He kept moving along even in spite of the card mechanic thing. So.
He's a really good GM. My first time playing anything with him, and I'd sign up again in RB.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. He's been running that game here for, I'm not sure since the beginning, but for a couple of years anyway. It's very popular. He actually, I think he did not run it last year, and people were a little upset about it because everyone wanted to play it. So that's why I brought it back this year.
Well, and I mean, I signed up for it because we were trying to find a game for us both to play in. And I signed up because I was like, Muskets and Tomahawks, we played it. And although we played it a few times when we ran it, I still feel like I could spruce up a little bit with the rules.
Oh, me too, as far as that goes. We haven't played it a ton. We ran it at the con. We played it, maybe a dozen times.
Something like that. Yeah. I wanted to play it more. I figured, well, if he's running it, he probably knows better than I do how to do it, that Earl, I mean. Yeah. And so that was the main reason. And it just happened to work out for us both to be playing in it. And then, I mean, it was such a fun game.
Yeah, it really was.
So I really looked forward to that coming up here to Maine and then playing. And everyone, as soon as it was over, I was like, I want to play that again.
Yeah, we were lucky too that we had a good group of players around the table. That doesn't always happen, but yeah.
No,
everyone was having fun.
And what I liked too also, and I was spending a lot of time on this one particular game, but what I liked in addition to that was it didn't matter what team you were British, you were French, everyone's just kind of helping one another.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is the rules. I think the rules kind of lend themselves to a more friendly atmosphere.
They do. If you're playing Muskets and Tomahawks and you're taking it seriously, you're doing it wrong.
There you go. I mean, that should be the tagline on the game. You're doing it wrong if you're taking it seriously. And then they should pay your royalties. So that was Friday night. And let's talk about Saturday because there's so much going on here at Huzzah, right? Tons and tons of games every day, really.
There is. And there's stuff going on that you don't even know about. We're sitting in a room that I didn't even know was here until this morning, so.
Yeah, we were a little, I know it's probably not interesting to anyone who's not actually here, or maybe not intending to come, but we were set up, right out in front of the main entrance into the main ballroom, right? And it was kind of dark and maybe a little noisy. We were thinking, oh, we'll see how it goes. And the benefit of that would be that there'd be foot traffic walking by. Right. Where we're at now, there's nobody here, which I actually prefer. But you get all the foot traffic combined, maybe someone stops, and then you can interact with them a little bit, which is, it's odd for those of you who are going to be listening to this after the fact, or when you download the episode or get it on your podcast app or whatever. I don't really care about what's going on. But for a live event, it's better to have someone else come by.
Yeah.
But then Dean Emerson is one of the convention organizers. He's been on the show before. And Dean said, well, we get this other room. Do you want to check it out? And I think, is it called Breakwater? Is that what?
Breakwater, I think. I don't know.
So I'm like, well, let me look. And he leads me down. We go down this little corridor and I was like, wait, there's stuff over here? And so we come in and he's like, and there's another room, but there's stuff going on there. And so he takes in here and it's a little cooler, which is nice because the hotel, I feel, runs a little warm.
It seems to be a little warm, yeah, but that's, yeah.
And I mean, outside, it's not. It's cold, but it's, you know, in the 60s. So we come in here and there's nothing in here and we're set up and it's great. And I think you said it looked like they did some advanced squad leader.
Yeah, they had an advanced squad leader tournament and this is obviously the room they did it in. I'd actually sort of forgotten about that. I considered playing in it, but then I wanted to, there was other stuff that I wanted to be able to do.
Well, kind of like Friday afternoon when you were supposed to be here to play a game and you were instead playing Star Trek Online.
Yeah, you know, stuff happens. I got here late. Unfortunately, missed my game Friday afternoon.
I mean, I can't complain.
No apologies to that GM, whoever he was, because I know that's no fun when you have people register and they don't show up.
Yeah, if you ever see the name Adrian Benson on your register sheet again, just tell the organizers, kick him out. I don't want him. He's not going to come anyway. Give me someone to actually show up and play. I came up with my wife and the baby. And so we got a late start actually on Friday too. We were intending to leave at like noon and then push it off to one and push it off to two and like one thing after another. So we don't actually get up here until after 5 o'clock. And it was crazy. Thankfully, my first game was, what was that? 7:30, 7 or Tom Rock, something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
So, and that was the only game I had to play in. Cause I mean, what I normally do, and this is just kind of a tip for any of you who are, have significant others and you want to go to a huzzah, you want to go to a convention anywhere near you or like a trade show like Salute or whatever, and your significant other, it involves travel, significant others like, well, I don't know, maybe what's worked for me, and it may or may not work for anyone else. It may not that you're going to bring your wife, Adrian, but if you wanted to bring your wife or whatever, who knows, you might, right? But what's worked for me is that I make a deal where I split up the time where I'll say, I'll do some stuff for the convention and then we'll have some stuff as a time as a family. So in the past, like the first time I came up was my 1 year wedding anniversary and she was okay with it. She was like, we'll go. And so we split it up. I played a few games. We did some touristy stuff in Portland, went to Old Port and lighthouses. And that's what we did this year. The plan, which didn't succeed because baby, that all day Saturday would be family time. We'd do whatever with family. Friday and Sunday would be convention time, which means Sunday is doing this now for those of you watching live and listening later on. And Friday was our game. And, so that's kind of how I was able to split it up. And I mean, it works.
That's one way to approach the way I usually approach it is if there's a convention I want to go to, I'll tell my wife, there's a convention I'm going to this weekend and I'll be back Sunday afternoon sometime. And that's never not been okay. So you might try that.
I maybe it's just a matter of fact because you've been married so much longer.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
This is 5 years for me. And maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm still like, let's see what we can do together. And yeah, I don't know.
You'll grow out of that.
Maybe, I don't know. We'll see how it goes, right? So then on Saturday you had, I mean, I'm looking at your badge and it's all tied up. Those watching live, you can see on mine, I got one thing, right? I get this. And not that you guys can see, but on Adrian's, it's like, it's jam-packed the whole day. So you had stuff, what, starting Saturday morning at 9?
Saturday morning at 9, yeah. I do tend to fill my schedule up, which doesn't leave a lot of time for, like, you know, going around touring Portland or whatever, which is too bad because Portland's a nice city.
It's gorgeous.
But, I mean, I figure I'm up here because it's a gaming convention, so I might as well be playing games or at least doing gaming stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, yeah, I played 3 games Saturday. I'm not doing anything today because I'm...
Well, you're doing this. This is what you're doing today.
Which was far more important than playing Rich Clayton's Waterloo.
Of course. Waterloo. I mean, who cares? Big anniversary, seminal, battle, important for all of world history. No,
but who cares about that? Cause yeah, John wants to,
This is War Gaming Recon is way more important. So what was your first game Saturday?
The first game I played Saturday was a Zulu. British Colonial Zulu game. It was the, I actually have to look it up here because if I don't look it up, I'm going to mispronounce it.
Okay.
Yeah, so the battle is on Lawana.
I can never say that.
Yeah, no. So, which, in real life was a British massacre and in the game was a, British massacre.
Oh. So. History repeats itself.
Yeah, so when your game demonstrates reality or gives realistic results, I guess that's a good thing. The game master was, Bill Greenwald.
I've never played anything with him.
This is the first thing I'd ever played that he did too. But he took the, if people are familiar with the board game Command and Colors, he takes the rules from that and actually utilizes the activation system from another board game called Battle Cry.
Oh, okay.
And he sort of meshes it all together, throws it in a blender and out comes this system of rules that he uses for, black powder, colonial era, miniatures games. The movement system is very simple. It's hex-based, the same as the board games are. And the board is divided up into three sections, left, right, and center.
Okay.
And your unit activations are based on where they fall on the map. So it's like depending on the card that comes up, you may be able to activate units on the left side of the map, but not units in the center. And what we had, my teammate and I, what we had come up a lot was our forces were concentrated in the center of the map and we had no cards that would allow us to activate units in the center of the map. We had all cards that were either left flank or right flank.
Mm-hmm.
Now Bill's modified the rules so that you can use one of those cards to activate just one unit in the center. So at least you get to do something,
mm-hmm.
but it isn't, you can't do as much as you need to do to win. I mean, let me put it that way.
Well, that's a shame.
It is. I mean, it wasn't bad. It wasn't as bad as I may be making a sound there. Early on in the game, even though the British are hugely outnumbered, my teammate and I decided to be aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's always a smart decision, right?
It usually is, actually. And, we did have a cavalry unit, which made it easier for us because they can move much further. Normally, you know, can only move one hex, but cavalry can move three.
Okay.
Excuse me. So we were able to actually do a significant amount of damage to a number of the Zulu units before they were able to actually get good cards, would allow them to activate the units they needed to,
mm-hmm.
to press their attack. So the goal of the game is the way you had it set up, each unit that is destroyed is worth a victory point. Whoever got 7 victory points first wins.
Okay.
There were leaders on the board. They each counted for 1 victory point.
It's pretty interesting that, most of the stuff that I've seen up here involves miniatures of some sort. I mean, there are some board games, but you don't see
more board games this year than previous years. Yeah.
And that's what I think, like, that there seems to be a shift in that.
There does seem to be. I kind of hope it doesn't shift too much further, if I can go ahead and say that, because.
Well, no, definitely. I mean, there are board game conventions.
Exactly. And there's not too many historical miniature conventions, at least in this area.
No.
At least not of the size and quality of Huzzah. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So that was your first game. And then you had another game right in the afternoon?
Yeah, I had again, it was another African game that was
You're really into that colonial period.
Well, huh? This wasn't colonial. This was modern. It's a set of rules called AK-47. It was run by Rich Clayton.
Oh, he always does such a good job.
Yeah, absolutely he does. This game, I'm not going to have enough time to talk about all the cool stuff that he did for it. But,
it sounds like maybe we should do a special episode just on this game.
Yeah, you could probably potentially do that. I'm sure he'd be up for talking about it a little bit.
I bet. Oh, he's a great guy.
He really is. But it's the, Sudanese Civil War, which is still going on at this point.
Yep.
So, and it was an interesting situation. It was the town of Juba, and we had multiple forces on the board. We had U.S. Marines who were guarding the American embassy.
Mm-hmm.
We had, South Sudanese Liberation Army people who were the quote unquote rebels. I guess you're a rebel depending on which side you're on when you say that.
One person's rebel is another's freedom fighter,
yeah,
right?
Precisely. And that's the side I took. We had the quote unquote legitimate government of Sudan. They had troops on the table. And naturally, being a modern conflict, we also had UN blue helmet peacekeepers. And nobody was really sure what they were going to do. The UN was quick to align themselves with the legitimate government, the current president of Sudan.
Were they like GM controlled, the UN, or?
No, they were player controlled. And they, I wouldn't say they had freedom of action, but they could choose within certain boundaries to align themselves however they wanted to. Now the guy, and I'm afraid I don't know his name, but the guy who was playing the UN actually did, I thought, a really good job with it. He kind of role played the UN, and you can't be the UN and just pick a side and start blasting away at the other side. Like he was backing, he chose to back the legitimate government of Sudan and sort of outlined that there were areas of the map that were, he put his UN forces in these areas of the map that it was the airport and a compound area,
yep.
to protect the civilian population. And, you know, you rebel people stay away from here. We didn't press the issue because we had our hands full with the pro-government forces, the mm-hmm. police and the Sudanese army.
Yeah.
But had we tried to pass through these areas that the UN had declared off limits, there could possibly have been conflict between us and the UN forces.
It would have been interesting.
The UN troops wouldn't have been any pushover. I mean, they were.
No, they looked like, I stopped by at one point and beautiful looking board, but the UN looked like they had some serious firepower.
Yeah, they did. They had an actual tank. They had a T-55 tank. They had some BMP personnel carriers. They had, Rich said, but I actually forget what nationality the actual UN troops were, but I mean, they weren't pushovers. They weren't scrubs.
Yeah.
The government forces also had, help coming in from Uganda. Army flew a transport plane full of troops into the airport.
Yeah.
And so they supported the police in the south part of the city and, frankly, were quickly wiped out by the rebel troops. But, you know,
wow.
he had a lot going on in that game, a lot that he had to manage. And one of the cool things he did about it was, since it's a real thing, it's not made up.
Mm-hmm.
It's still, the fight is still going on in Sudan. Periodically, he would have, you know, quote unquote news bulletins that would come across, that would either be published in the paper or would come across radio or TV stations that he would read out,
mm-hmm.
that would give information to the players that had an impact on what they were doing. And it may have been true or it may not have been true because it's the news, and, you know, the news never gets it wrong. So it was kind of interesting. And they were, the bulletins that he posted were actually real. It was in the Sudanese media.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. He put a lot of work and a lot of research into that game.
He always does. Every game he does is impeccable, superbly run.
He never does anything halfway, Rich. Yeah.
No, it is truly inexperienced. I would say, for me, he's on my list of people that whatever I can, I'm playing in anything he does.
Yeah. Yeah, except, like, for right now, I'm not playing in water, but never mind.
Well, you already played in one. For me, I know we want to talk about the other game you played in, but for me, the other GM who's like that, and I've talked about him a lot on the show, is Mike Payne.
Yeah,
I actually felt bad because I was torn. I wanted to play in, he runs stuff basically nonstop when he's at a convention.
Yeah, he does.
And I wanted to play in his event on Friday night, because I'm like, oh, it's Friday night, I want to play.
Yeah.
And of course, I got one thing I can do. I do that, or I do Muskin and And I figured, Mike, that you'd understand. I'm sure you do, but I was like, oh, I really want to play.
If you should have talked it up, because I would have done Hang On in a heartbeat. Yeah, we probably should have done that. I didn't,
But then, I mean, as much fun as it is, and it's a blast, really, that it would have just been kind of selfish. It just would have been like, I just really enjoy playing this stuff. I want to go play. Whereas Muskin and Tomahawk, loved playing. It was a great game, but it was also, I think, maybe in the back of my mind anyway, I was thinking, down the road, maybe we can see how it's done.
That's
and then
exactly what I was
kind of run is. Something different
yeah,
in the future.
In addition to just wanting to play the game because I like it, it was, Muskets and Tomahawks, it was kind of a research project for me.
Yeah.
We run it at a convention. We'll probably run it again. And I want to see how somebody else did it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I was like, I'm pulled in two spots and what do I do? And, if I had more time for games, I would have played in Mike's, yes, I want to say today, but today's Sunday, Saturday, whatever.
Yeah, Mike does a great game with the freeform, you know, rules that he does. Mm-hmm. And, I don't even want to say the best thing about his games, but he should win best table award at every convention he's at.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, with all the handmade scenery and stuff that he puts out.
Like almost everything's scratch built, right?
Yeah, pretty much. He buys very little as far as I know.
His wife has to be a saint too. I don't know how he finds space for all this, but. He has this Facebook group called The Barbarians. I'm going to do a whole episode on Facebook groups or war gamers that people should join. And his is going to be one of them I'm going to cover. But on his group, at one point, he had photos of his workspace.
Yeah.
And, did you see this?
Yeah, I saw this.
And I mean, it was so much stuff, but it was like gold, but it's like stuff on top of stuff. And I don't know how he gets his wife to be like, that's okay. Or maybe she's like, this is your space. It stays there. It doesn't go anywhere else. I don't know what, but
yeah, maybe.
His tables are always fantastic. He's such a great guy and the rules are, I mean, they're always amazing and he changes them slightly. So they're familiar enough, but you never really know exactly how it's going to go.
Yeah. He uses his own homegrown rule system. And so he's able to quickly make changes like that on the fly and it always keeps it interesting.
And for me, I guess one of the reasons why I didn't play in anything of his this year is that he's at just about everything. He's here at Huzzah. He goes to TotalCon. He goes to Havoc. He goes to Five Consoles, right? And OGC, I think he does too.
I'm not sure, but basically everything we go to, he's at. So we always have plenty of chances to play the game.
Yeah, like whenever you're in New England, chances are you're going to run into something he's done at a convention.
Yeah.
And then he even shows up at Games Days for different places sometimes too. So
yeah,
you can get it. I was like, well, you know, I can get at it just about any time that I want to.
Right.
And it's not a problem to play in stuff with him. Whereas how many times am I going to get to play in something with Earl?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know because I think Earl's up here. He's part of the conspiracy, I think, the gaming group.
Not sure.
I think so. I was talking with Gordon of Adler Hobby, Adler Board Game Cafe now.
Right.
And I think he was saying that they coordinated on some stuff, but. Anyway, I diverge and, so you get the, I have a bad habit of just kind of going like, this is a plan, let's talk about, and we go this way, then we go this way.
Yeah, I've noticed it's not really on script, but hey, that's.
Well, that's one of the things, see, for today's episode, normally what I do, I record at home, right? And so this is the first time ever of recording on site live anywhere. And so I have this website, this app I use, And it's basically intended to, like, when you go in grocery shopping or whatever, you can say, get the bananas, get the milk, whatever, and you just go and you check it off, right? Yep. And it happens live. But I use it for the show notes, so things that I want to cover on episode. And I had a printed note, so I printed out a printed note copy for me, a printed note copy for you, Adrian. And it's here, just kind of like topics, like headers, really.
Right.
Like, we should talk about this and we do whatever. And we don't actually have to cover everything. Well, some stuff we do. But we don't really have to cover everything on here. But like the benefit of that is it's just like, here's an idea. We do whatever. And the downside is you don't really know what to do with that. Or you can just be like, you forget about, I forget, and I go, let's talk about this instead. We do this and that or whatever, you know.
All right.
But your third game,
it was called Blow That Bridge. And that was, run by Joe Edel, Scott Coonan, and Anthony Mombaco using, Warlord's Bold Action Rules.
Mm-hmm.
Modified version of Warlord's Bold Action Rules. That's one thing that's kind of fun about this convention. The guys running the games are all very experienced war gamers. So they have no problem taking a rule set and modifying it to give it a different flavor, make it better.
Yeah.
So that's two games I played, and I'm quite sure that Rich Clayton wasn't playing AK-47 right down the middle either. So he modified the bold action rule set for this particular scenario. The scenario being, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, supported by 82nd Airborne Paratroopers, had to blow up a railroad bridge
that was
in use by trains that were transporting V-2 rocket parts. So the Germans started on the board with a significant portion of their force. The U.S. troops didn't start with all that many guys on the board. Basically, they're combat engineers, a sniper team, a machine gun, a handful of things like that. But the primary goal of the United States troops was obviously to blow up this bridge, and there were numerous secondary objectives scattered all over the map. It's an idea that Scott said he took from 40K, and if you took one of these secondary objectives, you would then get a bonus that you could use. For example, the U.S. took one of the objectives straight off the bat, and we got what was called a map table.
Ooh, okay.
And so not all of our troops started on the board at once, the airborne troops in particular came in as reinforcements. You had to roll to see where on the board your reinforcements are going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
But since we controlled this objective and had the map table, that would allow you, if you didn't like the roll that you got, you could re-roll it.
That's huge.
It was a huge advantage for us in that every time we rolled and dice are dice.
Of course.
But every time we rolled, it almost seemed like the first roll was like, not what we want.
Yeah.
You would roll the second roll and it would be perfect positioning to bring that unit in.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans had a stronghold in a little village at one end of the town, which it actually would have been to their advantage to get out of there and move those troops toward the bridge to support their guys on the bridge. They didn't do that. And that's why they lost 18 points to 2. But.
Oh my goodness.
It was a raffle stomp.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
But they had all their troops in that village. And so in order for us to put pressure on these guys and build a secondary objective, we kept getting rolls that would allow us to bring all of our reinforcements on, basically right next to this village. And we were able to wipe them out. I mean, we took a lot of casualties doing it,
mm-hmm.
but they really had no chance based on our dice rolls. But like I said, dice are dice. It could just as easily have gone the other way.
Why do you think it was so easy for you guys to get that objective that resulted in having the map table?
Well, it's random. The objectives were all over the map. The Germans had an equal chance to capture the same number of secondary objectives that we did.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you took one of these objective flags, there were, I think, 6 of them, and you drew a card at random.
Oh, so it wasn't like the map table was tied to that objective?
No. We just got it by luck. Yeah, we just got it by luck. And that was another thing that...
Okay.
Our luck in that game was just over the top, because with the U.S. having variable reinforcements, the map table was the single most important.
Yeah, that's what you needed.
Tool for us to get, and we got it right away. So.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah,
between not leaving the town and our ridiculous luck, the Germans really had no chance.
It would have been interesting to see what would have happened if the Germans had gotten the map table. I mean, it wouldn't have been so useful to them.
It wouldn't have been particularly useful to them, but
it would have been better. And in that sense, could have been hugely useful. I mean, as you said, you guys just, such a huge landslide. I'm amazed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they didn't even try to stop us from blowing up the bridge.
Wow.
And we were talking about it after the game was over. you know, the Germans were like, you know, so what did we do wrong? This was, you know, how could we have done this? And Scott was like, you needed to get out of the town. The title of the scenario is blow that bridge. That's what you have to not let happen if you're the German. And they didn't really even try to do it. They had plenty of troops in the town to start with. And what he had told them was, and I'm not saying that I necessarily would have done this either, because one of the idiosyncrasies of a war gamer is if you give him a building to hide in, he'll probably hide in it.
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
I love to turtle, so.
Yeah. You know, in their defense, the town was a secondary objective, but the bridge was the important thing. So what he said was they gave them trucks and half tracks for just that reason.
Oh wow.
They should have loaded up and just zipped to the bridge because our engineers were able to just basically walk up to the bridge worrying about nothing, plant their explosives and blow it up.
That's a shame.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good game and there were some tense moments, but yeah.
Would you say that people had fun? Like, did they?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even the Germans, like,
oh yeah,
they lost,
I think everybody had
hidden
fun.
Okay.
There was one guy who maybe didn't have so much fun, but.
Like a power gamer rules lawyer sort of person?
Yeah, sort of like that.
I hate that. Like, I know some people are turny-minded people, and I get that, and that's what you want to do. I'm not. I'm the casual gamer, which is odd because casual gamers tend to not be war gamers and stuff, but like I don't want to play with people like that.
Well, see, the thing with this guy, it seemed to me, was that he's bold action is a pretty simple set of rules.
Okay.
It's easy to get a handle on, and it's kind of what I would actually call sort of a Hollywood feel to it.
Okay.
I mean, it gives you a good sense of World War II squad level combat, but it's in no way serious.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. I mean, the rules give good results. It's fair, but you can't call it a simulation. And I think that's what this particular guy was used to. So he was, as far as I could tell, he was basically mad that he wasn't playing the rules that he wanted to be playing.
Oh, so. A little bit of culture shock, maybe.
Perhaps, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. So that was your Saturday night. And I know it's not really fair to ask, nor is it necessarily fair to the people who played in the games and who jammed them. But would you say you had a game that like just was the most fun or most exciting for you out of the whole weekend? Cause it sounds like they were all amazing.
They were all really quite good. I would have to say though, it's probably a tie between the South Sudan and Blow That Bridge. If I had to pick one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a tough call.
It's a really tough call.
Maybe the better question is like, what about whichever game games you like the best, what components about them made you like them so much?
Okay, well, South Sudan, then, for one thing, it's current, which always makes it kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And
as long as you're not playing a terrorist. That's one of your criteria, you told me.
I suppose you could say I was playing a terrorist.
You were, which I was shocked me.
I was the rebel vice president, but he's a rebel, not a terrorist.
One person's rebel is another person's terrorist.
So,
just saying.
I would say that for that game, just the research that Rich puts into it just adds so much to it aside from the actual game aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But the bold action game in terms of, action and all kinds of combat and stuff that was going on was definitely the most exciting of the bunch, I think.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So I suppose if I absolutely had to pick one that was like, yeah, I want to play that again, I might go with Blow That Bridge. I think I would kind of like to play it as a German next time and see if getting out of that town actually does make a difference.
But do you think part of your enjoyment at it was that you just kind of won by such a great landslide?
I'm sure that has nothing to do with it. I won the Sudan game as well, so.
Well, you are on a streak, my friend. Let's see, you won Sudan, you lost the,
Lose the Zulu game.
So 3 out of 4, that's not bad.
That ain't
right?
bad.
No, that's, hey, although I'm 1 out of 1, so I'm 100%.
Right, okay, so.
I'm just saying, as far as winning percentages go. Not that it really matters, does it?
No, it does not.
Okay. So, one of the cool things about Huzzah is that it's not just gaming and playing great games, but they have a really great selection of vendors.
They do, and that's getting better and better every year, which I'm glad to see because I love to spend money, so.
Well, and I love to look around and then find things that I think other people would like and then entice them to spend their money on it.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed.
it's a trait of mine, and I think I excel at it, I would say.
Yeah, I would say.
This is my first time coming to Huzzah since the new location. We're at the Doubletree in South Portland, near the main mall. And previously it was at the Fireside Inn and Suites in Portland. Maybe what, 15, 20 minutes up there or something like that?
Not even. I think it's like 2 exits.
But that was much smaller. Here, of course, it's bigger. I think they just recently renovated it, maybe did some new construction and stuff too.
Yeah.
So there's tons of room, tons of space. It's gorgeous. And part of that is it gives you more room, not just for games, but for the vendors. So, if I'm remembering, and of course I'm doing quick math live, there's 2, 4, 6, what was it, 9, 10 vendors? Something
yeah,
like
that. I think
that.
10.
Because there's the one in the middle, and I can't remember the vendor's name, which is not exciting at all.
Cool.
And then just about the entire perimeter of the main ballroom was covered, except for the back left corner, which is where Mike Payne has his stuff set up, because he takes up like...
He takes a lot of room.
It's huge,
with his tables,
but it's worth it. And so like, it's great because like the Hobby Poker came, they come every year.
Yeah, they do.
Adler Board Game Cafe came, they come, I think, every year.
They've been here every year, I'm sure.
All sorts of different stuff there. Dean Emerson has his used books for Brigadier bookshelf there.
Yep.
And I mean, for people who follow me on Facebook on Wargaming Recon and Adrian, you know, cause I was, I guess bragging. I didn't mean it to brag, but I guess it was kind of bragging. I'm not into Napoleonics at all, but I've heard for ages about this really great Napoleonic book that you got to find. You can't get, but if you can pay an arm and a leg for it, you got to get it. It's a Campaigns of Napoleon by Chandler. And I work at a library, so we actually just got a donation. Some guy died, his wife gave us a huge collection of military history kind of stuff. And this was in there. It's like, it's the jewel of the collection that we got.
Yeah.
And I know you've been saying, like, you have a copy. You paid, what, like 60 or something for when you got your copy?
I paid like $60 for it new, and that was maybe 20 years ago.
And if you were to go on Amazon, as of the time that we're recording, 2015, it's like 170 or so in new condition on Amazon.
Yeah.
And who knows what it'll be by the time people listen to this or whatever. But I saw it there and I'm like, I'm not really into it, but I'm going to look and I'll ask. And so Dean told me a price. I was like, okay, maybe. And again, I'm not really into Napoleonics, but he mentioned a couple other things. And I found a couple stuff by Featherstone, which is what really enticed me. So I looked at that and there was a great deal on that. It was 2 or 3 tables where the books were $10 each, or you got 3 books for 25, mm-hmm. which was fantastic. So I found stuff there. I was like, you know, I gotta get the Chandler book. I mean, it was a great deal. So he gave it, I bought it, but I mean, that would be a really great
deal.
That
would have been a really good deal. Yeah.
But I bought that and bought that. And I mean, I paid a song for it in comparison. And granted, like the prices on Amazon, it's Amazon.
Right.
And used, not used, but like new on Amazon. So it kind of inflated and everything, but it just goes to show that you can get a great deal. You can help out a local business might come into a convention like Kazaa, and instead of giving it to some megacorp that doesn't really need your money, you're making a difference with local gamers, helping to support the hobby. And then, I mean, I got a great deal on that.
Yeah.
But then there were other really good vendors. There's Wargames Terrain, I think they call it.
Yes, Wargamers Terrain.
And the stuff is fantastic. He makes it all himself. It's bendable.
Yeah.
Everything. You buy a stone fence. And it looks solid, right? Like it's made out of resin or whatever. And it's durable and everything. But you can bend it, S shape or whatever. So you get multiple uses out of it. This stuff's affordable too.
Yeah, it's not too bad, really.
And he has like rivers and marshes and swamps in 2 versions. One where it's just painted blue.
Yeah.
And that's cheaper. I think for like the swamp, it was like a really good size piece.
Yeah.
Like a foot diameter maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe a little smaller than that. But yeah, it was good size.
Like $18.
Yep.
Or you could get it with like the clear, like the resin, you know, that kind of stuff, for the, like the clear water, view. And that was like 30 something,
yeah.
30, 28, something like that. And the river set was fantastic. It was tons of, you could fill a whole 6-foot table with one big river on it.
Yeah.
And that was, I don't remember, what was that, like 80, something like that?
It was relatively expensive, but again, for what you get, maybe not so expensive.
It's all done. It's painted or with the clay resin stuff. It's locked, it's based. It's bendable. It looks like it's going to last, you know, like a lifetime, really.
Yeah, I've never heard anything bad about their stuff, so yeah.
This was my first time being experienced to it, but it was just really cool. A De Kent Books is here. Architects of War. Who else am I missing?
Footsore Minis.
Footsore Minis was here, and they
Eureka.
Did. Oh, that's right. Eureka was here with all. They have tons of just really interesting stuff. A little off the wall. But just really cool. And one of the things that they do, and I didn't see what they probably have, they call them like their ragged whatever sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they have Rebel War guys, which are really amazing. And they're ragged, and you're thinking, ragged, like, do I want that? But they have like bullet holes in their clothes, and things are kind of torn, and like maybe they're missing boots on their feet and that sort of stuff. But that's what it was. It wasn't all pristine like what we put on the table.
Yeah, definitely not.
So I think it adds a lot of character. It makes it really cool. And their prices are pretty decent, too. And who's the vendor? They have all like the Luftwaffe stuff, the air. I can't remember. Maybe that's the name of it. I don't remember.
MSD games, I think.
Yeah, you're right. Tons of stuff. Gorgeous, yeah. Right? And just great variety of stuff. And yeah.
Like, I've been wanting to try, he's got his kind of headline product, which was Luftwaffe in 1946.
Yep.
I've been wanting to try that for years and have yet to be able to fit it into my con schedule, but maybe next year.
And just a great variety of stuff. A lot of, Crossroad Games was here. A lot of board games from them. Just variety, no matter what kind of time period you like, World War II, you want Napoleonics, a lot of Black Powder, Hail Caesar, Field of Glory had a lot of stuff here, and yeah. Star Trek, Attack Wing, tons and tons of
lots
products.
Of that stuff, yeah.
The Center vendor in particular had just tons and tons of it.
Yeah.
Things I've never seen anywhere else.
Yeah.
So it was a good variety of stuff here at the vendor, so you can get a lot of shopping. And actually, when we finish up this live recording, I'm intending to go.
I have to go look at Dean's books.
great stuff at Brigadier Bookshelf. So I'm sure he'll be here next year. For those who come in 2016, bring your cash. You're going to get a lot of great books from him. I'm interested to go to the Hobby Bunker because I want to get the two most recent issues of Miniature War Games magazine, which is done by a friend of the show, Henry Hyde.
Oh,
and
yeah.
War Games Social Strategy, Ancient Warfare Magazine, Medieval Warfare is here, War Games Illustrated. You can get all of those here. And it's hard because I know like the current sideways stuff is supposed to be in the distribution through Barnes and Noble, but it really depends on what your local store has.
Yeah, exactly.
And so whenever I've looked, my local Barnes and Noble doesn't have. And you can subscribe online or you can get a digital sub, but like shipping for the print to here in America, it's expensive for any of them. And I don't mean to, spotlight them, but
anything War Games Illustrated, Europe, it's just the way it is.
And so, that's what's always held me back. It's like, it's a $50 for a sub for some of these. And then you got to pay the shipping and all that kind of added. So it's hard. And you can, digital sub, of course it's less. And I won't do digital sub for Miniature War Games just because of how exact editions is. And I've talked about this before. And they're much, much better. Like when you license during the time of your license, you can download the PDFs and you get them. But I just want to buy the PDFs of whatever I want is what I, for me.
Yeah.
But for the other ones, War Games Illustrated and for the current Sour stuff, you get the PDF, so it's great. But for the magazines, I like having
the physical copy, yeah.
So as much as I love the digital sub, I want to get the thing. So I look forward to coming to something like Huzzah so I can get it, because it's a place like Copy Bunker, they get all of them. It's worth their while to get it. You go in the shop down in, I want to say Malden, is that
it
right?
Is Malden.
Malden. And I mean, you should know, you're the one who drives when we go.
So let me know when you want to go next.
Okay, we'll plan a shopping trip. Go to the Hobby Bunker is a great place. Like, you have to go to the Hobby Bunker. They're fantastic, just all around. Great to do business with. You can order online. Anyway, I don't need to do an infomercial for the Hobby Bunker. But one of the things I like is I can go and buy Miniature War Games. I can buy these other magazines that I love that these people do. Jasper and everyone, just fantastic work on these things. And it's funny, isn't it, that it's easier to drive all the way up to Maine to buy the magazine.
Yeah.
I won't drive myself for whatever reason into Malden to the bunker, because in my head it's like the traffic, but I'll go to Maine and I'll buy the magazine.
Well, to be fair, depending upon the time of the day, it can be easier to get to Maine, but.
It's about 2 hours from where we're at, roughly, one way to go, and with Boston traffic. I mean, it could be 2 hours of bus traffic. But this way we get to see beautiful Maine, Portland, and see everyone else. And then on top of the vendors, they have the raffles, which are really cool. There's all sorts of different things that get raffled off. And you can get a lot of stuff around your case. Actually, you did pretty well.
I did really well. I got some World War II rule sets and supplements. What did I get? I got four books, I think. They were probably anywhere from $12 to $15 a piece. And speaking of Wargamers Terrain, they donated a set of roads that were worth $45 or $50, I think was the marked price. And I won that too. So for a $20 worth of raffle tickets, I walked away with almost $100 worth of loot. So can't beat that.
No, that's fantastic. And of course, it's a raffle. You don't know if you're going to win or you're not. And my luck has always been, well, I can't say always. My first year here, I won an Architects of War. What did I win? Was it the small house, shed, or whatever?
I thought you won that ramshackle barn.
You know what? I think you're right. And
I won the meeting house, which I have yet to put together.
And I haven't put together the ramshackle barn. But the other thing, cause I bought it's a small house. You lift off the roof and it's inside. It's detailed. You get the bed and all that I bought. But you're right. The other thing I won, and that's what, a $65 piece or something? Or it was, that was,
yeah,
I mean,
I'm not sure, but they weren't cheap. And, like, if you were gonna buy it, and I got it for, again, 10 bucks worth of tickets.
Yes, you get the raffle tickets and you're golden, or even, Karmasari Publishers has donated, digital subs to all of their magazines, and as of we're recording right now on Sunday, this is the final ticket raffle round, and ends at noon is when they told you gotta be here to get it, but there's two digital subs in there, ancient, Warfare, I was about to say Ancient History because that's a new title coming out, but which I backed on Kickstarter, we talked about on here, Ancient Warfare Magazine and Medieval Warfare. And so 10 bucks worth of tickets, you could get that. I could say, I'm going to get this and cheaper than paying for the sub. And even if it was the same, at least this way, I'd be getting something that I love, supporting the magazine I love, plus also supporting the great work done here by MHWA. And it's a fantastic organization. Not only, they don't just do the sub, they do so much else. And
tons of stuff they do up here, but they put so much work into this con, but it shows.
It absolutely, it is, I think, and of course I've never been to like, Historic Con or Fallen or any of that kind of stuff, but it is, I think, the best tabletop miniatures convention I've ever been to.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. And even if you don't live anywhere near the area, I think it's worth once in your life making the trip up here just to go.
It probably definitely is. I mean, there's the con, there's Portland, which is, you know, a decent tourist destination in its own right. So yeah, it's worth checking out for sure.
Great shopping in Portland. Plenty of fantastic places to see. We actually discovered, yesterday we were going to go to, Johnny, for those of you listening, that's the heating or AC system at the hotel, but, we wanted to go out for lunch, but not like a sit down because of the baby and stuff. And so we were going to end up at, I was going to say Johnny Rockets. That was one of them. We didn't go Five Guys Burgers. And we actually pulled in and we went in and it was packed and no place to sit. We're like, forget it. We went further up the road and I think we were going to end up at Subway, but right next was a sign that said like Elevation Burger or something like that. And I've never heard of them. And my wife was just like, I want a burger. So we went in and it's like Five Guys, but it's better because everything, it's all grass fed, beef, free range chicken, organic this, tons of vegan options, vegetarian options. Everything's as healthy as it can be for the stuff, locally grown, sustainable. And affordable.
Yeah.
So like when you do some of that stuff, you pay through the nose, right? For like a really good grass fed, organic, free range burger or whatever. Yeah. And some people, they don't care, right? Some people just not that thing or whatever. But like I taste the difference. And I mean, I'm not someone who's like, I can taste like cayenne in this or whatever. Like that's not me, but I can taste the difference and it tastes better. And on like a regular, like a Five Guys burger, it's delicious, right?
Oh yeah.
But like as I eat that, I feel a heart attack coming on.
That's fine.
And with this, I did it. And then they have one of the, and I don't know if this is a chain or if it was a one-off, cause I don't know anything about it, but they have one of those cool, Coke machines that a lot of places have, movie theaters can have, where they have like all the different, every flavor of Coke you can imagine and, Fanta and Sprite or whatever else. And it's all in this machine. You put your cup in and it has that touch screen and you're like, I want this. And I want one of my favorite fountain beverages to get is a root beer cola. And sometimes I'll mix it up and I'll do vanilla flavored stuff, but it's root beer and it's Diet Coke or you can do regular Coke or caffeine or whatever. And it's like this perfect blend of flavors. Kind of like when you get a really good barbecue sauce, it's that perfect blend of like ketchup and all this stuff.
Yeah.
To me, this is like the barbecue sauce of beverages. It's and that's weird, but it's really, really good. Not every place has it, but this place had it. I mean, it was a fantastic place to eat. So I have to recommend it, but so many other great places around here. It's really good food is what it is, and it's affordable, and it's just, Portland's a fantastic place to be.
It is.
I was really impressed too, generally with the hotel.
And
the hotel's nice, it's easy to get to, there's plenty of parking. We touched on a little bit, one of the things that I didn't like so much, and I don't think you did either. For whatever reason, the hotel seemed to just kind of run warm temperature-wise.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's easily controlled in the room, so that's fine, but the public areas do tend to, and maybe that's because of all the...
It could be all the people.
All people, but yeah, a little on the warm side, maybe.
At least in our room where the AC, whatever thing is, like, it would just randomly come on and turn off, and like, it would turn off and then it would feel like sweltering to us.
Yeah.
And then you'd wait and wait and hope and pray it would come back on, and sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't. And so like, that was a little eh. And then for me anyway, and I texted you about this, I think, was the beds real, or at least my bed, was really firm. Like the mattress was like, and it was high up. So it was cool to be hot, but every morning I woke up with back pain. And I mean, I'm 33. I'm not supposed to get back pain like this. I don't do heavy labor or anything, you know?
No, you don't. no, it's such a minor complaint, but yeah, the public areas seem a little bit warm. That was the only thing that I can say.
My wife had a problem with the bed too. And I mean, I've been in a lot worse hotel. Generally, when I go to a hotel, I know I'm not going to sleep well.
Yeah.
And I slept pretty decently. It just, when I woke up, I was like, I can't move very well. And like, I was walking like an old man, like hunched over, and I'm like, oh, I'm so old. And what can I, and I gotta feed the baby. And, but I can't, you gotta wait like 20 minutes for me to walk from the bed over to where you are because. So, I mean, it's just, it's a little crazy, but, and granted, I mean, two different experiences with the beds. It probably just me. Who knows? But that is just something that I was like, oh man, you know, not great. Do you have anything else before I get into the mailbag section that you want to say about the convention or stuff you did or anything? I mean,
nothing beyond just thanking the Maine Historical Wargamers for putting this thing on every year. It really, I mean, I've been to Historicon, I've been to Fallen, I've been to Cold Wars, not recently, unfortunately, but Huzzah is still probably, even though in terms of scale, obviously Historicon is the winner. Huzzah is probably still my favorite convention just because it's big enough that it's got something for everybody, mm-hmm. and small enough that it still feels like you're just hanging out with friends. We don't get that at HistoriCon.
Well, that's one of the things, I mean, I've done many episodes about TotalCon and not as many about Huzzah, which I feel bad about because Huzzah deserves tons of content on here. But one of the things I've loved about TotalCon that for me is equally true about here is that, like you said, it has that feeling of hanging out with friends that you could go up to one of the organizers and you can chat, you can talk about something, and things happen right away. And I'm not just saying this is a complaint or whatever. You're seeing something good, and they're like, oh, we like that. They make note, they care.
Yeah.
And they make you feel like you're part of it. I feel like you can come the first time, and you can feel like you belong. You can feel like you're one of the group. You might not know anyone else, but you're still going to feel that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so I certainly didn't know anybody the first time I came up here.
Yeah. So it's funny, every year that I come, and even in between years, just like online, you get to know more and more people. And I think that's one of the things that I can't stress enough. It's not just the event here, but it's the lead up to the next year's and talk about the previous years. And a lot of that happens online through Facebook and other means. So it's important to kind of be proud of that.
Yep.
And then MHWA does game days throughout the year. Of course, I'm never able to get up usually in the winter, and coming from Massachusetts up to Maine in the winter with snow and stuff, probably not going to happen.
Right.
But they do a lot of stuff. So it's easy to kind of stay in touch anyway. I'm really grateful that I got invited to come this year and to do the show and everything. And, hopefully it'll happen again. I mean, I'd love to, as long as they want to keep inviting me.
Right. The only chance that'll happen is if they're not actually listening to this broadcast.
Oh, come on. We'll make a fake version. No. As everyone who is used to the show, long time listeners know, I like to do a mailbag section. And this time we're going to go to Twitter. Normally I talk about stuff that's come up on Facebook or emails and that kind of stuff. But we get here and I just realized I'm holding up my sheet in front of the camera for the live viewers. Sorry about that, people. I do not have any camera awareness, although I'm getting some mic awareness here. So the first thing from Twitter, here we go, we can hold it up over here, is from @AdlerHobby, who commented in response to episode 133, which was the crowdfunding Adler Board Game Cafe episode. You want to listen to that, that's wargamingrecon.com/WR133. And @AdlerHobby said, quote, thank you. Actually, it's more like thank you. it's all caps. For the awesome podcast and amazing support. So you're welcome. I know that's from Gordon. And I'm really excited about the Board Game Cafe up there. And I was happy to do a whole episode about that and just kind of talk about crowdfunding in general, because it's a huge thing nowadays with wargaming. Games are being... Sales of Glory was done that way, wasn't it?
Yeah.
On Kickstarter. Kickstarter's talked a lot about Indiegogo, and there's Patreon, and no, this was a GoFundMe that was done. And then @BellweatherGames commented about episode 135. This was another crowdfunding thing that was Swamped Kickstarter with Ben Gerber and Dennis Hoyle. And @BellweatherGames said, quote, thanks for having us on. Really fun chat. As people know, that's now been successfully funded, going for stretch goals. I urge you, if you haven't backed it yet, to back it. And then for the stretch goals, say that you want the 3D boat, the better enhanced meeple, and the better enhanced crocodile 3D meeple. So it's really cool that they're going to be doing this kind of stuff. I'm looking forward to the game. And that's only $12 plus $2 shipping in the U.S. $14 for a copy of the game. It looks amazing, really high quality. And then we had from @Joshua, or rather, as they would say in the Netherlands, @Joshua Browers, commented about episode 131. That was the Ancient History Magazine Kickstarter with Jasper Ortiz and Yasha Browers. This is a crowdsource funding mailbag section today, it seems. He said, quote, "And that was a podcast. My thanks for hosting Jasper and me. If you missed the live show, you can download it." And that's right. Of course, this is being done live in person here at Huzzah. It's being streamed online through our live page, wargamingrecon.com/live. But a podcast isn't live. It's what you get afterwards. It's what's in the feed. So you can subscribe. We're on iTunes, on Stitcher. I mean, everywhere that podcasts are. Just remember to go there, go to our show notes, and download the episode. There's a lot of really cool stuff there, and that's how you'll be able to find that stuff. And I just want to reiterate my thanks to everyone here at MHWA and Huzzah for making it a fantastic event. I'm so happy to have come back after that absence, and I wish I had come back sooner. I don't know why I didn't, but I wish I had. I mean, you've been here all along, and you kind of, in a roundabout way, touch on some of the things that just bring you back year after year. I mean, if people don't get that this is worth coming to because of just how awesome everything is that we talked about, I mean, you should, because that's what it is. So I want to remind everyone that the next episode of the show comes out, Monday, June 8th, 2015. And I believe that's going to be when I talk about helpful Facebook groups, and I might cover G+ stuff as well, but helpful like social media groups for gamers, things you should belong to, places to get ideas, and just kind of share information and get help and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be something that you can't miss. And this was actually a topic suggested by listener Dave over in the UK. And so we'll be doing that. And then I want to remind all of you that if you like what we do here at Wargaming Recon, we have a Patreon. Think of it like a tip jar. For as little as a dollar an episode, that's $2 a month, less than a cup of coffee, you can say, you know, I like what you do, thanks. And it's a little bit to help out. Help me to get maybe back to Huzzah next time and buy some cool stuff to talk about on the show, or to give a little money to guests like Adrian for the time so they can try out stuff and then talk about it and that kind of stuff. So you get all of that. And then don't forget, there's an episode guide you can go to for any upcoming topics. And everything, our social media and all that, that's all in our show notes. Everything that Adrian and I talked about, the vendors and everything here, we'll have links to all that in the show notes. So if you forget everything else that we've talked about, and we talked about a lot, we really squeezed it in here. We could have spent like 2 or 3 hours talking about it.
But I honestly thought we'd have a hard time filling up an hour, but you were right.
See, I told you on our Facebook page, I did a reduced view of this outline of the stuff. And there's, maybe 20 things. And a lot of it is like, remember to talk about the episode guide or Patreon, like that kind of stuff. But just like even one thing that I put is, I just kind of outlined, I put like Jonathan played in the name of whatever. And then I say, talk about what Adrian played. and that's it. And oh, I was telling you about this and you looked and I could tell you looking and you're thinking, oh, he's a moron.
That's what I thought.
I really think I could tell it was on your face. Like, it's written in ink. Jonathan is a moron. And so I said to you, trust me, this will fill out at least 45 minutes, but we'll get an hour out of this. I swear, because it's what happens. You go into other things and you all sorts of stuff and everything, but no one's going to remember. I don't even remember half of what we talked about, which is why, you get to go back and maybe you do. I don't know. You might have a better memory than I do.
I know.
But if you are like us and you don't remember everything we talked about, don't worry. Show notes. WarGamingRecon.com/WR136. That is WarGamingRecon.com/WR136. And that'll get you to this. There'll be links and all sorts of kind of cool stuff. And that's the way to do it. So if you are listening and you were here at HuzzahCon 2015, chances are we missed something. I'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch in the show notes. And just let us know what you liked about it. What were some of your highlights? And hopefully I will be back next year, I hope. If I get invited, so we'll see how that goes. But if you've never been, you gotta come. That's my bottom line, right?
Yeah, definitely. If you're a gamer, particularly if you're a war gamer in anything resembling driving distance to Portland, you owe it to yourself to get up here at least once.
In this day and age, you can take a train. Well, maybe not with the recent train stuff, but you can take a train up to Portland. You can take a ferry. You can hop on a plane. Come to Portland. Come to Huzzah. Prepare for 2016 is really what it is. You have to be here. And so you guys know what, this is the end of the show. Thank you, Adrian, for taking the time to come. I know it's Sunday and you probably want to get to Tim Hortons. You haven't been to Tim Hortons yet and then head back down to Mass.
What I want to be doing is playing Waterloo, but I'll stop talking about it.
I'm sure everyone's going to be like, you should have played Waterloo. Forget that part. But for everyone else, thank you for listening. And for the live viewers, thank you for watching live on wargamingrecon.com/live. So until next time, you know that no matter what, you have to get to HazaCon 2060.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly. New episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 12-7-games.com.